And we are back. So continue, Pippa.
So yes, so basically what happened was in summer of 2012, the Protection of Freedoms Bill got made into Protection of Freedoms Act in May 2012, and that's where we got the clauses for the fingerprint consent in. And it was great because all sort of five or six whatever parents and the privacy groups just thought, brilliant, we've done it. So they always sort of toddled off and did their own thing. And it was the first summer for a long time that I could just think, oh, we've done it. That's great. You know, there's not much to do. That summer was the summer that I think it was Northside Independent School District decided to tag with our active RFID chips and a lanyard around their school students' necks, their school kids, to improve registration. But they could also see if the kids were on site. If they weren't in class, then the school would still get money for them, the children being on site. And I can remember listening to this over the summer holidays here, so it must have been August time, and thinking, oh gosh, that's never happened in the UK, but there's no provision in the Protection of Freedoms Act for RFID. And I was just listening to it, there was a really courageous 15-year-old girl called Andrea Hernandez who had decided that she wasn't going to wear this RFID tag on religious grounds, big respect, you know, she saw it as mark of the beast. And so she refused to wear it. So the school said, right, if you're not going to wear it, you're not allowed to take part in sports day or the prom or anything like that. So she said, fair enough. So they said, well, tell you what, let's give you a lanyard. We'll take the chip out and you can pretend you're wearing it. And she went, no, I'm not doing that either. Good for her. And so eventually the school ended up expelling her, basically. And they said, well, if you're not going to wear the chip, then you can't come to school. So she ended up using an institution called the Rutherford Institution, and they took the case to court. I think she went on religious grounds, or the family went on religious grounds, I think, rather than privacy. But is it the EFF Electronic Foundation over there got involved, and ACLU, and ACLU, what's ACLU? It's the American Civil Liberties Foundation over there. But union. Unfortunately, she lost the court. Union, that's it, thank you. But she did lose the court case, and she kept on going. She had to sort of keep going to the other school. But as it happened, within a year, the school had switched off the RFID tags because it hadn't improved the attendance whatsoever, because technology doesn't
improve. Right, it had no effect.
Got no effect. Yeah, but it was really interesting because the company that was supplying the active RFID tags, the RFID was pulsing at a frequency of 433.92 megahertz. 433.9, and the school was saying, don't worry, it's absolutely secure. Nobody can read that except for us or anybody else who had a 433.92 megahertz reader, because it wasn't encrypted, this stuff. And even though it might have only been a particular sort of maybe 8 to 10 digit number that it was bleeping so the child could be identified as it went into school, you could still see where the tag was. And I think with that sort of technology, the first thing that would spring to mind for me, if I was wearing it, is brilliant. I'll give the tag to my best friend. She can carry it around all day for me at school. I'll go and twag off. So it's sort of, not exactly a very child safe technology, I don't think. But the interesting thing is 433.92 megahertz is used by the American military to identify transit movements of their military stock. So within big major transit networks like railways, airports, big interstate routes are receivers that will pick up the 433.92 megahertz. So when I heard about Andrea's plight, I decided to set up a website called Against RFID in Schools, and I just wondered, so I was writing about Andrea and what was happening over there, much like I did with the biometrics, but I didn't want to muddy the biometrics website that I had with the RFID. So I'd set up this website, and a guy from the States had got in touch with me and said, I'm ex-military, this using this frequency with the school children is basically a bit of a test to see if it could be rolled out for the rest of the
tracking
populace, for tracking purposes. Yeah. And I thought,
right.
I hadn't done any research into 433.92 megahertz, and I think maybe about 8 weeks later, it was one rainy weekend, and I thought, I'll have a look at this. And I was at, if you go to rfidinschools.com, I've actually written an article on 433.92 megahertz, and it goes back to Lockheed Martin developing the technology. Apparently in the first Iraq war, the United States did sort of lose track of an awful lot of its military material. So in the second war, Lockheed Martin stepped in prior to that, and because the Department of Defense had gone out to contract to basically tag their military hardware and I presume soldiers as well, to see where they all were, and so they could track them around the world. And NATO also uses the same 433.92 megahertz. So basically globally, because I think NATO is in over 100 countries, in the United States I don't know, but I'm guessing it's more than 30 or 40. They've probably got bases in. There's a global network of receivers for 433.92 megahertz. So in actual fact, what the school children were wearing in the States, I'm not saying the military were picking up where the kids were, but all I'm saying is there is absolutely a possibility that it could, because it's the same technology. And in fact, Lockheed Martin have the intellectual property rights on that frequency, full stop, whoever's using it. So that was interesting. But anyway, I think some schools still are using that in the States. And I think there's a company called iGuard that have a website that say, we supply 43392 to the United States Army, and we also supply it to schools. So you've got one company saying, you know, you can tag your kids with it, or you can tag a tank with it. It's good for everything.
Well, that's like, so, it's like Disneyland as well, isn't it? Because most of the rides there are sponsored by military industrial complex companies. So, you know, military, children, they seem to sort of go hand in hand, don't they?
And how can you copyright a frequency?
It's intellectual property. It's interesting, because I didn't realise you could do that. I think 433.92 megahertz has a particular quality to it, that in the fact that it can penetrate through things like water and concrete. Other frequencies are not as good as doing that. So it's got an international standard number associated with it that is, you know, specific that if you use this frequency, there are certain conditions that you have to use it or have to be met if you're going to use that particular frequency band. And I think because most frequency bands, when they're registered, are sort of European or North American, South American, you know, African. But because this is an international frequency band, and it's used by military and also, I guess, schools, because Lockheed Martin developed the standard for it and how it should be used and the technology, that basically there are certain standards to adhere to. As I understand, I'm not a massive expert on it, but there's a paper that I've written on it that's on RFID in schools.com. It's only 3 pages, but I had it read over by a professor of physics at the local university, and he read it through and said it's absolutely plausible and he couldn't see any problems with it, but it's certainly a basis for a good jump start if anybody wants to do any more research on it, because that's the technology is not yet in the UK. But that was one thing that particular summer, 2012, when I heard about what was happening in San Antonio with Andrea Hernandez, I thought, do you know, I wonder if there's any schools in the UK that are using this technology. So I just did an RFID in schools in UK or colleges. And I think about 4 or 5 pages into a Google search, there was an article in the RFID journal which said that there was a college in West Cheshire, which is over in the west of England, north of England, just south of sort of Liverpool, that area, that were using something called ultra-wideband RFID. But it was, again, it was an active tag. So the students in this, it's a college that was teaching 14 to 19-year-old students. They had over 5,500 students. They had 2 campuses. And all these students had active RFID tags that were wearing in a lanyard around their neck. Now, these RFID tags were far higher up the radio frequency spectrum than 433.92 megahertz. This was in the gigahertz scale. So bearing in mind that in the UK, our Wi-Fi operates at 2.4 gigahertz, and I think in Europe it can go up to 5.2 gigahertz. these kids were wearing an active pulsing radio frequency device that was operating at 6.35 to 6.75 gigahertz. So what it was doing is, rather than sending out a single frequency, which has its own sort of specific bandwidth, I guess, it was sending out a splash of frequencies, like a fuzz of frequencies, in between 6.35 to 6.75 gigahertz. So this is called ultra-wideband. And what an ultra-wideband frequency does is that it can give you a 3D image because of the different levels of frequency. For example, you can use ultra-wideband for things like ultrasonic scans on wounds, or you can use it for ground penetration, because the different bands of frequency will hit different densities of, say, layers of rock or whatever's in your body, and then you can build a picture.
Oh, so it'll kind of triangulate?
Yeah, absolutely. But what it will do, and if you've got a building that's like three or four stories, it will give you a particular point in 3D, so you can see where a child is mm-hmm. on what story, whereas a single frequency would only give you like a 2D, almost like a radar picture of where a child is. So they were using this ultra-wideband frequency on these children. So I read this article in the RFID journal, and the RFID journal was saying, this is great, you know, these kids are wearing these frequencies, and it's just been given its IEEE standard number. And the IEEE number is the Institute for Electronic and Electronical Engineers, and they give standard numbers for different types of technology, I guess. And this particular standard had been approved in 2012. However, these kids have been wearing it since 2010. And I just thought, how does nobody know about this? So I got in touch with the school, and I sent them a whole load of freedom of information requests. I said, can I see your consent forms? How many children decided to take it up? What's the alternative if they didn't want to take it up? How much did it cost? Are the teachers wearing it? All these sort of questions. And the school just said, with regards to consent, they just said that, oh, the pupils were issued them at enrolment. So they were issued these cards that they got told they had to wear around their necks at an enrolment, but nobody had actually said, by the way, it's pulsing out at 100 metres, which is nearly 300 feet, which is really wide. I mean, I have Wi-Fi and I switch it off at night, but it has maybe a 60-foot radius. These kids were wearing an antenna that was pulsing out at 100 metres, which is 320-odd feet. That's a huge amount of radius.
Of kids standing together.
Yeah.
So it's basically
in a college.
They each had a smart meter on them.
So yeah, in a classroom for kids, these pulsing out. My God.
I know, and none of them knew about it because they were also wearing around their necks, I think, a card for a bus pass and a card for something else. So this other sort of lanyard was hidden within other lanyards that they were wearing for different things. And so I managed to, it's a good long story short, this must have been late or early autumn 2012. By March 2013, they switched it off. I'd got, I think, six questions that asked in Parliament Tom Watson, because I got in touch with him because he had asked some questions on biometrics. I'd been in touch with the Information Commissioner's Office, again, that they oversee the Data Protection Act, because the one thing this type of identification, if a child is wearing it, apart from all the health implications, but it would give an indication to the school. And the college actually said in this RFID journal article, you know, we can see who the kids are, who their peers are and who they're hanging out with. Actually, if you're using it for registration, you shouldn't be snooping on them and seeing who they're hanging out with, or whether or not they're with a boyfriend or girlfriend, or whether or not they're going to see a school nurse, whether or not if you teach you're going to a union meeting. Because these are, you know, the medical information and the union information comes under this sensitive personal information under the Data Protection Act. So they would be breaching that by being able to see, without the pupil's knowledge or the teacher's knowledge, what their political affiliations were, or whether they were seeking medical advice or going to counselling, whether or not they were perhaps attending within a school a Christian meeting or a Muslim meeting or a Buddhist meeting. You know, it was giving a very detailed information about the children, and they had no idea this information was being collected. And if you go to the RFIDinschools.com website, I've got a video tab. The particular company that was supplying this standard of RFID, which actually is military grade RFID, sort of have this promotional video, and it sort of shows almost like a Harry Potter's Marauders map of a plan of the a college with little green blobs moving around and showing in real time where all the pupils were and who they were. And so when I found this article in the RFID journal, started asking freedom of information requests, the RFID journal pulled their article straight off the internet. Zebra Technologies, who'd supplied the schools with technology, they pulled their press release off the internet. The video about what was happening at West Cheshire College came off the internet as well. Luckily, I'd taken copies of everything before they pulled it. So the only evidence there is now of what sort of went on at the college is on that website. But if you use, there's this great facility, and I don't know if anybody here has ever used it, called the Wayback Machine, the Internet Archive. If you type in Wayback Machine or Internet Archive, what you can do is go back in time to any website to see what it used to be like.
Yeah,
which is
great.
really.
It's great.
yeah. So it's all on there, but it's, you know, but yeah. So as far as I know, anyway, that it got a bit not hairy for me, but hairy for the college, because they weren't answering freedom of information requests, basic freedom of information requests. I mean, everything that I've asked them is on a website called whatdotheyknow.com. So you can go to that website and type in Pippa King or West Cheshire College, and you'll see everything that I asked. But it there's a lot of information on there. But to cut a long story short, they weren't answering basic questions about how much did it cost, how you asked for consent, how many kids are wearing it. And so the information commissioner got involved and actually said to the college, you've got to answer these questions because you're in breach of the Freedom of Information Act. Coincidentally, at that point in time, the principal who had signed off the project decided to retire. We got a new principal in who then decided to answer all the freedom of information requests. She turned off the RFID system just before she retired. And so this new principal came in. I got an awful lot of answers. And there's a tab on that website that says West Cheshire College. You can see the whole timeline in history there. Interestingly enough, the principal that retired was called Sarah Mogul. She got an OBE for services to education in January 2014 after basically tagging 5,500 kids for the best part of 3 years with an active RFID hung around their neck that they had no idea they were wearing. I sincerely hope that there are no health implications for any of those children that were wearing it. But yeah. I think we all are aware of...
Well, there's evidence that sort of with that technology, so if they have got something wrong with them,
because there's the evidence there now that you've provided, then they'll have recourse if things do happen, but gosh, let's hope they don't.
Do you know what? I don't think any of those children knew what they were wearing at all, because I got an article in Guardian about it, and the local paper was really keen to run something. And I had a really good dialogue with one of the journalists in a local paper there, and then it just stopped. There was nothing. He wouldn't return my calls. So to this day, unless I don't think any of those children probably realised what they were wearing, unless they stumbled across my website or the Guardian article, because they were never told.
That's been shut down, that, hasn't it? Totally.
Yeah.
Because there'd be mass compensation liability for the government or for the school and for the company. For any adverse effects. But then, I suppose because we're surrounded by the same sort of technology everywhere, you'd have to specify that was a particular place that actually caused the illness. Yeah, we're all being irradiated every day, whether or not we're in our house or walking down the street. Unless you live in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by hills that frequencies aren't going to interfere with you, then we're all in the same boat in that respect, I suppose.
I think it would be very difficult to prove, unless statistically you looked at all. I mean, in fact, there was only 5,500 pupils in 1 year. So over a period of 3 years, let's presume it's maybe 7,000 pupils. If you did a study on maybe the rates of breast cancer in the females, I don't know. I like you say, Nick, I don't know how easy it would be to prove, given or the fact that we are sort of in this big electro smog at the moment.
Or even fertility. I mean, you know, maybe those kids will have difficulty reproducing.
Yeah.
There's no knowing.
They start trying to do that.
I think this is the thing with the technologies like biometrics and RFID is they're so new. Quite a lot of the parents that came on board with the biometric fingerprinting were from the tech industry. They could see the risks of taking a 6-year-old or a 10-year-old's fingerprint and that data having to be secure and very secure for the next sort of 60 or 70 years. They were working within an industry that was looking at biometrics for authenticating people for insurance policies, banking, etc. But and for them to sort of see their to see kids being fingerprinted in schools was massive alarm bells ringing. And I think the same with the RFID. We're using this technology now with no real knowledge of how it affects us here and now in the present, especially if we're wearing an active RFID chip, but how it will affect us health-wise, especially with that in the future, but also where the data's going and how it's going to be used.
Do you think that they knowingly didn't put biometrics into the data protection because the technologies
would have been
developed at the time, and so I'm sure governments would have known that technologies were being developed and purposefully didn't put it in so that they could have this get out clause, this to say, we didn't know it would take off.
I'm not sure, because I think, I mean, obviously the biometric technology comes from the military, and I guess the military and the banking system would have used it probably in the 90s, but we weren't using it as adults sort of 10 years or 15 years later in the 2000s. And in actual fact, the technology that microlibrarian systems were using was coming from a military company called Antion, and Antion was supplying Guantanamo Bay with their fingerprint readers. So this is how it got into English schools. It was cheap ex-military initial sort of biometric technology, because Antion were obviously using better systems, I guess, in Guantanamo. You wouldn't need that sort of level of security. But I don't know. I just don't think biometric was a word that was sort of used in the 1990s.
At all the arms fairs that they have around the world, these technologies would have been, you know, like in computer game conferences, they have like little speakers of the new game that's going to be coming in 3 or 4 years' time. Something like that, I'm sure, would happen at arms fairs. And, you know, this is, like you say, it is military-grade technology. So I just doubt very much that the governments of the day wouldn't have known that this technology would be eventually passed down to the consumer level.
Right, and eventually on sale at every GI surplus outlet, you know?
And considering that this sort of data collection had been discussed at various Bilderberg meetings since the 50s, this is what they're gearing up for, isn't it? And the sort of
absolutely,
the generation that are now being bombarded at schools with this type of technology are the precursor to it being just the norm. You know, this generation, mm-hmm. it's like because our generation of people haven't grown up, but the kids of this generation are. We're like the transitional phase of the transhumanist agenda of And I think maybe why RFID hasn't been too embedded into like adult life is because we carry around the similar technology in a pocket with the phones. So they've sort of so they're tracking us all, but the kids are the ones that need to accept the technology.
Right. They need to be indoctrinated.
Yeah.
With the program. Well, Fi made the sort of point earlier about the sort of the theme parks and all that having the military technology sort of already indoctrinated in the raids and all that sort of thing. But also,
fingerprinting and Irish.
Yeah, well, Disney introduced that about 2001 that you used your credit card, and if it matched up with your eyes, you would get in, sort of thing, and you'd be, you know, in the theme park on that.
Disney are military, aren't they?
Well, yeah.
Did you hear about the advertising campaign that Richmond Sausages had this Christmas with the RFID tags?
No.
That would be a no then. Okay, so Richmond Sausages, which is a fairly, I was going to say it's a high quality brand sausage. It's sort of a popular brand sausage in the UK, decided that they would market their sausages this Christmas with an advertising campaign that gave, if you had a promotional code, you could ring up, and if you were lucky, you'd get an RFID tag that a youngster could, they sold it as you could put it on your teddy, so that you would never, if you go to Richmond Sausages on YouTube and have a look at their advertising campaign, it's just almost laughable. So there are things on the market called tags or tiles that you can get, which is Bluetooth, which you can put on your cat, so you can monitor on your phone where your cat is, for example. So Richmond Sausages thought it might be a good idea if they did an advertising campaign where they gave these tiles to parents so the parents could tag their toddler's teddy with it. So they would never lose their teddy again and the toddler would never be distressed. But if you look between the lines, I mean, I think Saatchi & Saatchi did their advertising campaign. It came to something like £1.8 million, and that's a blooming lot of sausages you've got to sell to recover that sort of advertising. Mm-hmm. And these, so they would... or Saatchi or whatever it is now. I actually went into the local shop here and I took a picture of a sausage packet with a promotional code on, and I think David Icke used it as a meme because I sent it to Richie Allen and he sent it on to David Icke, so he sort of used it as a meme. And it was, so you could win sort of theme park tokens to go to different theme parks, but if you were really lucky, you could win this RFID tag. And so I think that was particularly insidious, that they were targeting this at families, young families with young children that had a teddy, because this was specifically, there was three adverts they did. And I think the first advert went out during the final of X Factor. I mean, not that I have a television, so I didn't see it, but that's when the first advert went out about these tags, these tiles, these tracking chips. So you can imagine the sort of conversation that this 2-year-old or 3-year-old would have with its parents, something like, well, mummy, you know, I really love my teddy so much, and you tag my teddy, why aren't you tagging me? You know, we've got it now, it's compulsory to chip dogs in the UK, and now we're, what, conditioning toddlers that it's okay for them to chip their teddies and to find out where it is on an app? I mean, that's even before school age. And to spend that amount of money in an advertising campaign for a fairly mediocre brand sausage, it just doesn't add up. And unfortunately, I couldn't ask any free information requests about it because it's all private companies, but it was just interesting.
And we all know the connotations of a teddy bear, don't we?
Yeah.
Oh, well, in case anybody doesn't, it's linked with paedophilia. But I'm just looking at the ad campaign here.
That's fucking well done.
And it's very interesting. The 3 million sausage and chip campaign by Saatchi & Saatchi London aim to help fuel family bonds and avoid a parent's nightmare of a lost toy. I mean, that's just... Oh, God.
That was not... Richmond sausage are owned by Kraft.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
I think... Yeah, these tiles have been around now for about 3 or 4 years, these type of little tracking chips, and they've not really taken off market-wise. And I just wonder whether this was an industry or a government stroke industry-backed site, almost like a psyop, to see whether people would take it up. And whether it, because
the teddy is representation of the child, isn't it? Yeah, but they can't put it's just a sub put there as a subliminal, and that it's really aimed at the kid rather chipping the kid rather than protecting the teddy bear.
Yeah, and getting that mentality into the parents. Well, I'm chipping my teaching the kids teddy bear. Why don't I actually put this tile onto my kid? And there's a if you type in, and there's another company called IOTA, it's like Internet of Things. It's called IOTA, and they have this IOTA tile. And on their advertising campaign on YouTube, it's about a lovely 4-minute ad, and they actually show a parent putting this tile, attaching it to a child's rucksack, and then waving this 4-year-old bye down the street. And thinking, why aren't you walking with your child? Yeah. You can't abdicate responsibility to the technology. Again, it's this disconnect that technology is
subversive,
stepping in.
Well, that's the connotation of the teddy bear, so that the parent doesn't have to have an emotional bond with the child. It all sort of hinges on the sort of fact that the child loves the teddy bear rather than its parents. It's fucking well done.
And the child, at the end, did you say that you won't lose your toy?
Yeah.
Your accessory.
Actually, if you look at the very closing scene of one of the ads that Richmond Sausage did on this, was a family sat at a table having their Christmas meal, and the mother and father were sat on one side, the two kids were sat on the other side, and at the head of the table in a high chair was a teddy bear with an RFID chip.
Whoa.
In it. And that I know, I just thought, wow, really, really interesting advertising campaign when you look at it from many different points of view. So. I can recommend, pardon me, anybody go on YouTube
as if a child could be lost as easily as just, you know, a teddy bear that you would just, you know, put down and not bother about and, you know, just forget, as if, you know, treating
well, and several of us here are parents. How many of us have had and literally faced the nightmare of losing a toy?
not me.
Can't say I have.
See?
No.
But again, isn't that sort of, shouldn't we be teaching the child the responsibility to look after something that it appreciates?
Yeah,
rather
there
than
you go. Where did you put it?
Yep. Tagging it and then going to an app to see where the tag is, you know. just very bizarre.
It is. It doesn't really make sense.
Only Madeline McCann had a tag on her, eh?
Oh, yes, apparently. No, where she was.
I'm sure it wouldn't have worked.
Know where her parents had put her.
Yeah. On Patrick's show, I heard you talking about some sort of tracking system that was it'd be able to track missing persons. Is that the scheme up in Glasgow, or was it somewhere else?
Yes, there was a couple of things that I talked to Patrick about. One was, so Glasgow got £24 million, I think, a couple of years ago from the government, the Department of Business, Innovation and Skills, to develop as a smart city. So one of the aspects of this smart city was to put in behind public space CCTV, which is actually IPTV, which is Internet Protocol Television, and really they're just surveillance cameras. So what was to upgrade all the surveillance cameras to high definition and then run behind it a system called Suspect Search, which was is provided by a company called Nice Systems. Nice Systems are coming out of, they're an Israel securities company that was set up a couple of decades ago by ex-Israeli defense personnel. So this Israeli securities company is supplying this system that's running, well, it's not yet running behind Glasgow's CCTV, because I sent them a freedom of information request. I keep sending them periodically freedom of information requests, Glasgow City Council, to see if they've switched it on yet. And the last one I got back about 3 weeks ago said, no, we haven't. We're having some system problems. We've not fully yet trained the CCTV personnel to use it. But they've had it nearly 2 years now. They've not switched it on. One of the things that they've not been able to provide me with is a privacy impact assessment. So under the Data Protection Act, if you're running any sort of surveillance or data gathering scheme, you need to do your own privacy impact assessment to assess how you might impact on somebody's privacy. And Glasgow City Council haven't been able to supply me with one of those. So I don't know whether they've not switched it on because they can't sort of fit it under our Data Protection Act, or whether, like they say, they've had some system problems with the IT. So that's just waiting to be switched on in Glasgow. So what that does, it uses soft biometrics. So it's not particularly a facial recognition program, as in the fact that it will recognise your face and say, this is John Smith or Joe Bloggs. What it will do is, pardon me, the system will look at the footfall within the city, analyse whether or not there's probably more people gathering in a particular place than there should be, say if there's a protest or a march. It will learn from, I guess, previous information from previous systems that NICE systems have sold to other places around the world, whether or not it would have probably advised the police how to kettle people. That's potentially what it could do. It will also provide a system whereby if there's somebody who's acting out of character, the CCTV cameras can look at the clothes that particular person is wearing, bomber jacket, jeans, colour of shoes, cap, dress, whatever, and then say, right, this is a person of interest. Let's track this person from camera to camera to camera to camera to camera across the city so we can see where it moves. In fact, I don't know if anybody here has seen Persons of Interest television series. The opening credits for that are just about identical to if you went on YouTube and typed in NICE systems suspect search promotional video. The opening credits to Persons of Interest is just about identical to that, and that's basically what's Glasgow's got coming to it. But also Edinburgh have just employed a company called Cognitech to look at running a similar scheme behind their CCTV cameras within the city. And West Midlands Police were looking to run a similar scheme called Face in the Crowd behind the public space television cameras in Birmingham run by Accenture called Face in the Crowd. They decided not to go ahead with that, but the fact that local councils and regional police forces are looking at these schemes is is what we've got basically coming down the line, I think, in the next 5 to 10 years. But we've already got facial recognition actually being used by Leicestershire Police on their custody suite photograph database, pardon me, and the Police National Database, which is an amalgamation of all the custody suite databases from all the 40 plus regional police forces on a national level. So Leicestershire Police started running this, I think, early in 2014, and they hadn't, there was no public discussion about whether to use facial recognition on custody suite photographs, because of course custody suite photographs aren't just photographs of people in custody or in prison. If you get arrested for something, the first thing that happens to you is you get your photograph, DNA, and fingerprint taken. Now, the charges might be dropped, but that photograph, fingerprint, and DNA doesn't get dropped as well. That stays on the system.
You're in the system.
That's right. Or you might go to court and be proved innocent, but again, the photograph, DNA, and fingerprint is still in the system. So there's a lot of innocent people photographs that are being scanned, maybe from CCTV, social media. So the police are out in the field. They want to know who they're looking at is a person of interest. So they'll send the photograph back to the police station and say, does this person pop up on the custody suite photograph images? And then it's, yes, it's X, Y, and Z, or it could be X, Y, and Z. So what I wanted to know was, from Leicestershire Police, could this be run in real time? For example, if the police were using body cams or sort of movie cameras, whether or not they could, it could just pop up and say, yes, this is so-and-so, this is so-and-so, this is so-and-so. And so I sent them a Freedom of Information request asking them this in 2014, and they went, no, not running in real time. It's retrospectively. So we take a picture, we have to go back to the database, and then we run it through the facial recognition suite. And then there was an article. I mean, the police, I love tech companies and police, because they're always, especially tech companies, they're sort of very good, the educational tech companies and like nice systems and the facial recognition, like what we can do, is it brilliant? So the police have their own monthly or probably weekly, actually it's weekly if I think about it, publication called the Police Oracle. And in the police, I subscribe to it. They know who I am. I put my own email address in there. I don't care. So I get an email every week and it tells me what articles are in the Police Oracle. And there was an article saying, Leicestershire Police to run real-time facial recognition system at Download Music Festival. So there's a big music festival in Leicestershire called Download. And I think about 110,000 people attend every year. So I read this and thought, I've just asked them a Freedom of Information request. And they said they weren't running it in real time. But yet this article says that they are running it in real time. So I sort of immediately tweeted it on my Twitter account, which, of course, nobody reads. Because I only got about 60 followers or something. So I thought, this is really big news. So I got in touch with the journalist that I've known for a few years that works for the Register and said, look, Alex, this is just happening because we keep in touch on facial recognition and what's going on with biometrics. In fact, the Register has been writing about sort of biometrics for the past eight years or so, and I've been in touch with them for that long. So anyway, he wrote an article on Leicestershire Police using this facial recognition system in real time. So basically, as people were walking through the gates to get in, the cameras were scanning their faces against a European purpose-made database of custody suite photographs. And what the Leicestershire Police said that they were checking for was people that were known to them for stealing mobile telephones and dealing in legal highs. Well, if you're dealing in legal highs, isn't that legal? So why do they want to know that? That's nobody breaking the law. So Alex wrote an article about it, and it appeared in the Register, and then ITM picked it up, The Independent, and a couple of other broadsheets, which was really good because he got the article out there. And Leicestershire Police were quite embarrassed, really, and I think the police, particular police oracle journalist, sort of got his hand slapped a bit by the police. So I sent them a Freedom of Information request, again, sort of saying, look, you say you're running it in real time. What were the false positives and false negatives? Because the thing that bothers me about this sort of technology is if the police say, okay, we've got you on this system, it says you are here at this particular date and time, where's your comeback if you weren't? How do you prove that you weren't there, even if you were with a friend, when the system says that you were? So you get what you call a false positive. So that's when a system says, this is you, but actually the system is wrong. So it's identified you falsely. Or you can get a false negative whereby you are actually there and the system hasn't picked you up. And this happens in schools with fingerprints. So sometimes pupils can put their fingerprints on the scanner and the scanner thinks they're somebody else. That's false positive, or they'll put the fingerprint on the scanner and it just won't recognise them at all, which is a false negative. And these sort of figures I've been trying to get from the Home Office and Leicestershire Police so that we know where we stand as adults. If the system says you are or you have been here at a particular point in time, and the Home Office and Leicestershire Police and the Association of Chief Police Officers, now it's not, it's the National Chief Police Council, they just can't tell you that. And again, it's the same thing with biometrics in schools. It was this facial recognition that the police are using, they're just getting on and very quietly using it and not telling anybody about it. There's been no debate in Parliament, no MPs know about it, the papers haven't picked it up. The only reason the papers have picked it up is because either I've blown it to a journalist and then the national papers have picked it up, or the biometrics commissioner has blown the lid on it. There's only been two, three people that have ever talked about it. We've got
that's because people have been directed to the like the Snoopers Charter that Theresa May, got put through. Can't remember exactly the name, but it's about collecting people's data. The government's ability to collect people's data. So they're focusing us on that rather than what they're actually putting in place.
The Snoopers Charter, I don't think it's actually gone through yet. I'm not particularly involved in that because I know people like Privacy International and the Open Rights Group. There's some really good privacy organisations that are completely on it with that one. And there's not really anybody else looking at the technology that's coming in.
Yeah.
And Snoopers Charter is all about collecting sort of metadata, yeah. isn't it, and content data from people's emails and online presence, whereas
the conversation has been directed towards the metadata rather than the stuff that you're talking about. Do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Metadata is not particular. Metadata isn't content about what you're writing about. So metadata tells it's just raw information about who you are, who you're talking to, what time you're talking to them, location you're at, and then the data then gets passed on for who all these other people are talking to. So it's like this big sort of connected dot-to-dot thing. What metadata doesn't tell you is what you're talking to somebody else about. But because metadata is, because we all have such a massive digital fingerprint nowadays in the fact of who we talk to, who we send emails to, who we text to, who we message on Facebook, Twitter, da-da-da-da-da, that actually the content of the data can be very accurately assumed. So that's how they get around things like the Data Protection Act, because there wouldn't really be, I don't see how the government, but I don't know enough about it, so you're probably asking the wrong person, but I don't see how the government could justify actually not reading, because it wouldn't be them that read it, it would be artificial intelligence computers that would pick up on keywords of the content of your email. They can make very accurate assumptions just from who you're contacting and when you contact them, etc., and all that lot. And if you ask the American government, I can remember watching an interview on one of the, I don't know, was it C-SPAN or something like that, and the American government were talking about metadata, and the question was asked, have you ever ordered a kill on somebody because of metadata? And they went, oh yeah, because it's that accurate. So they don't particularly need the content of your data. They can build up such an accurate picture from you from without the content. But yes, I mean, everybody seems to be focusing on that, and rightly so, because, I think in all respects and all the conversations we've had tonight with the children and their virtual learning platforms and the biometrics and the RFID and the facial recognition, but I just think we need to be, and this is what must impress on the next generation, very, I wouldn't say prudent, you know, we do need to be prudent about leaving a digital online fingerprint, but at the same point in time, we still need freedom of speech. And but at the same point in time, I think we should be speaking to each other. I think it's very important to meet with other humans and not just do everything online. But it's very difficult, isn't it? So with the next generation and how they're being brought up. But I was saying that I think the most insidious form of surveillance to me, I think, is facial recognition and facial tracking, because with every other form of technology, when we send emails or Twitter or we use Facebook or we use fingerprints or we use an iris scan, we interact voluntarily with that computer or that hardware. Facial recognition, we have no idea what's looking at us behind a television camera and CCTV. We really don't. And that's when it can, I think, when technology can track you when you don't know. I think that's a danger, and I think if these systems come in, I think that one of the main reasons why I got involved with biometrics with my kids was because I really, really wanted them to live in a society where if they felt something was wrong, they could go and protest without consequence. I suppose, you know, I got brought up in the 80s where we got taught that if you protested in China, you got whisked away and you never saw of again, and I don't want that society for my kids, but the way that it's going with possibly facial recognition behind public space television and the sort of digital footprint they can leave with the metadata or what they're doing on social media and how they can get profiled within education could possibly mark them as a person of interest to be surveilled and to be kept an eye on and then have a consequence if they protested about something. And I don't want that for them. I want them to be able to bring the Berlin Wall down if they want to, or stop apartheid in South Africa. You know, I see a society where I don't know whether that's going to be possible in 20 years. Sorry to be a bit depressing, but I'm trying the best to put a sort of as sort of to stop it, or for, you know, people to be accountable that are bringing them in and to raise awareness, which is why I thank you very much for having me on. You know, it's been an interesting discussion, and I know I've really talked an awful lot. I do apologize.
Don't apologize. You've been working hard.
You've done so well. You've got such an impressive array of knowledge there to put out to the people. Mm-hmm. It's brilliant. It's really brilliant. You've clearly done your homework very well.
Yeah, you're a warrior goddess.
Yes, very much.
Do you know, it was just, you know, I suppose initially I was a mum of a 6 and 7 year old, 2 sons, and I threatened my kids. You don't do that. Don't do that to a mum. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know what they say about an angry mama bear, right?
But I think for me, it's just this massive lack of transparency, massive lack of conversation, and this is an insidious sort of drip, 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 drip into society, and we're not fully aware of it because of that.
But yeah, all the information, you know, all these like tech companies and the companies that are collecting the data, and you know, the Newton.com, you know, it's all there. It's all in front of our face, but we're not directed to see it. We're directed to accept it, and so without thinking about the consequences, and you know, with all the crazy news that we have on a daily basis, people are just so bombarded that you know, that is the conditioning now, isn't it? Just accept what you're being told without question, and you know, when you do ask pertinent questions, like you're saying in Glasgow, they have to like stop because they've hit a wall there. Because if they haven't got those reports and they carry out, then the liability would be enormous. So yeah, you are a proper trooper, and bravo, big round of applause, because it seems that
definitely.
There's quite a lot of people that have been talking about this for a number of years, but not necessarily have been doing what you do, and actually taking the time and writing to these people and saying, "What the bloody hell are you doing?"
And pulling together, pulling it all together, you know, and getting it all kind of cohesive.
Yeah.
I think there is a responsibility in that. I mean, anybody can fire off any number of freedom of information requests. It's then the difficult thing then is sort of pulling together the answers and thinking, right, okay, what am I going to do with this? So I've written reports and just sent them off to MPs. I know I've been asking sympathetic questions in Parliament. And then brilliantly, they've got back in touch and said, I'm going to ask this question. I said, brilliant, go for it. And I did the same with the biometrics commissioner. I sent all the police forces freedom of information requests about facial recognition and how they were using it. And I put it all together and wrote a report, and I sent it to him and different MPs and peers in the House of Lords that have been asking questions, some SMPs and the Information Commissioner's Office. And Alison McGregor, the biometrics commissioner, actually emailed me back and said, thank you very much. This is very interesting. In other words, he had no bloody idea what was going on and it didn't remember the public. So he said, please keep in touch on this matter. So I was like, okay. Because, I mean, he's probably got an office of 2 or 3 staff. I mean, the Information Commissioner's Office that oversees Data Protection Act and the Freedom of Information Act, really good, but they're horribly understaffed. Biometrics Commissioner, fantastic, really overworked and understaffed. And I guess those two offices are for a reason. You know, but the Data Protection, the Information Commissioner's Office, I think should be getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger because of the amount of data that's out there and the potential breaches of the Data Protection Act. But in fact, you find that that sort of overseeing body is getting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller, and the data is just almost, it's like this big tidal wave. It's like standing in front of a tsunami, and this tiny little sort of body is there to try and regulate it all, and it's which is why I think it's important for us to be aware of what's going on, you know, especially in schools with children.
It must be a daunting task.
Yes.
To, you know, like you say, with the amount of data to keep a track of. Well, we're coming up to the end of the 2 hours. That was 2 hours. Wow.
Thank you very much. Very much appreciated. Thanks, Nick, and everybody else. That's very good. Enjoyed it. It's gone quick.
Thank you for the paper. It's brilliant. Brilliant to talk to you.
And you're most welcome back at any time. So we're going to play out with a little tune. This was Steve's recommendation of Somebody's Watching Me by Rockwell. Take care, folks.
Excellent. Thank you.
Namaste. Watching me. I'm afraid to wash my hair, 'cause I might open my eyes.